شوف
طبعا انا
That's David. You know, animals can see mock-ups. You know they can? If you want to do something very interesting sometime, why, see a dog or cat sit there minding his own business and throw up mock-ups of the opposite species in front of him. He probably won't get very violent. He'd probably just stand there and blink or back up or something. If you're real good at it, and if you can make him think he now owns it, why, he will get himself into a wonderful state. The subject of today's lecture is research materials accumulated during the last fortnight. Now, although in the HPC we have you nailed down to a schedule of rather precise processes, nevertheless, that's no reason why we shouldn't give out with what's going on. The actual fact of the six basic processes is that if an auditor cannot do these processes, if he cannot run them successfully on a pre-clear, then I can assure you utterly that he can't run any process on anybody. You see this? Then it wouldn't matter how much research material he had. He could have his notebook crammed with it, his head crammed with it, and he would find he merely had a crammed pre-clear. You should see this very clearly, that what we call the six basic processes are more or less the six fundamental ways of running somebody. And out of these fundamentals, we get all sorts of ramifications. It's probably not occurred to you that the entirety of Route 1 is spotting spots. Probably not occurred to you, but that's all under that one heading. Now, an auditor who can sit down and with a pre-clear and handle two-way communication with this pre-clear, either with the pre-clear knowing he's in session or not knowing he's in session, is going to be very successful in life. That I can just guarantee you. He will be successful. Furthermore, he will save an awful lot of time. He will. Yet, this is the most fundamental of processes. It involves the simple, basic mechanics of communication. And when these are obeyed, and when one forces the person he's talking to, or to also hit this groove, or inhibits him from hitting some other groove, you might think offhand that we have violated his self-determinism. Listen, if you have any trouble with two-way communication with a pre-clear, you can ask this question immediately, or the human being, you can ask this question immediately, what self-determinism? So you sure as the devil better inhibit or enforce something. Otherwise, just you are sitting there. You get this? So you put him into the lineup on two-way communication, knowing your most basic process, and what do we get? We get actually a fundamental of exchange of ideas. And here we have two human beings, and what do you know? Some ideas get exchanged. But let's say he didn't fall naturally into two-way communication. Let's say he's a banker, internal revenue collector, actor, radio announcer. And you start in, and do you know that you might as well go sit quietly in the park and watch the pigeons? So far as exchange of ideas is concerned, you might just as well. It would be a better use of your time. Because there aren't any ideas being exchanged, or, of course, transmitted or received. Now, you can sit there and transmit all the ideas you want to. they're not going to be received. Because this individual is unable to receive if he cannot follow a two-way communication. You should see this as an elementary fact. If an individual can follow two-way communication, then the two terminals involved are going to exchange ideas. And if he can't, then no ideas are going to be exchanged. I mean, it's just as elementary as this. So it's a question of why talk? And what do you know? Let's say you're talking casually. Oh, let's say somebody at the Big Shot Loan Company. And you're talking to this fellow, and you're trying to tell him that you're going to pay your installment in a normal course of human events. And he's talking. He just keeps talking. Threatens you. He's got a writ of attachment on your car, and he's going to foreclose on your wife. And he just keeps talking. You know, you might as well just get up and walk away. Why? Because 10 minutes after you've gone, the probability is he will only have a very dim idea that you've been there. You see? So why put in a conference on the matter? I very often regulate business conferences on this basis. Somebody says, we want to talk to you about so-and-so. There was some character named Ketchum, obviously named Ketchum. I give you three guesses what outfit he was attached to. Selective service. They call it selective service out of sarcasm. This fellow, Ketchum, and I'm using, by the way, his right name, because anybody would attach himself to this organization. He's not out of communication. He's crazy. So this character wrote in the other day to the Church of American Science, and he wanted to know something of the past and so forth of one of our people. And he wanted a full report on it. And he wanted the representative of the church to come right down and see him and tell him all about this. In other words, he asked for the particulars he wanted to be written to him in a letter, and then he asked for somebody to come and see him. He asked this of an organization which is only partly interested in this person. Now, just looking at the letter and the request, rather demand, and so on, would tell you at once that there was no use going down and seeing this man. He sort of has to catch a mock-up. You'd look at his name and you'd know that. So a mock-up has to walk in. This is what he's dramatizing. And if a fellow by the name of Ketchum would get himself mixed up with selective service and not see the funny joke connected with it, or for the sake of his social reputation wouldn't have enough sense to stay away, he's not in communication. So why go see the man? Do you know that you could actually do this? You could write him a letter and thank him for the interview. Now, you have to be able to look at people and tell whether they're in communication or out of communication. You have to be able to adjudicate whether somebody is going to inhibit or enforce communication on some other design than the exchange of ideas. Now, it's all right for you to inhibit and enforce communication because you believe there ought to be an exchange of ideas if two people are talking, and this is new and novel. The person who is unknowingly, unwittingly, dramatizingly, enforcing and inhibiting communication has no slightest idea of the exchange of ideas. This is one idea he doesn't have. He is probably there to enforce his ideas upon you or to enforce an inhibition of your ideas upon you or something of this character. There's not going to be any free interchange. It's quite interesting that two-way communication plays such a vital part in creative functions. Every once in a while down in Hollywood, somebody will assign you a co-writer. Somebody is supposed to step in and give you a hand on a script, something like that. And if it's some nephew, uncle, distant relative of the wife of the producer or the director, well, you know what to expect. Guy's going to walk in who's out of communication. The very funny part of it is he will not be able to pick the story up off of the written pages of paper in order to revise it. He does not see or assimilate the story with which he is confronted. So there is never a conference about this story. There is a story conference, but before you've gotten through, you will have talked about 18 or 20 or 60 different stories, none of which have any relationship to the story you're operating on. All right, they send somebody over that somebody in New York hired when the front office in Wall Street weren't looking, somebody who was a writer, a novelist, a playwright, who's a wordsmith. And he comes over and he sits down and he says, well, let's see what this is all about. And he takes a look at the script. He picks the story up off the script. He starts talking to you about the story. A very, very, very funny thing occurs. It gets to be a better story. It just can't help but get to be a better story, because there are two beings communicating on the subject of this story. And if these two people are in communication, it becomes a better story. It's just as inevitable as the fact that the AEC is going to go on blowing off bombs for the next 180 years. Just as inevitable as that. There's going to be a better story. If the person they send you is out of communication, you're going to wind up with a worse story. Now, there it is in the field of creative arts. We take a lawyer, attorney, sit down, gab, gab, walla, walla, about something or other. If this man is actually in good communication, you will wind up in a better legal position. If he is in bad communication with you, you will wind up inevitably in a worse legal position. And this, again, is as inevitable as the fact that all atomic physicists will go mad. Now, this, then, to a person who wishes to succeed in life, is a vital piece of information. It is even more vital than how you make acquaintance with a blonde or a good-looking boy. The modus operandi of that is all secondary to talking to him. All right, if you are one of that very small minority who are not bent in the next day or so in ruining everybody and everything, if you're one of the small minority that believes that life could and rather should go on, then be certain of this, that when you subject your work, financial, legal, or any livingness position to a non-communicating terminal, we go in and we ask an attorney, you see, for an opinion, and when we go in, we say, how are you? And he says, isn't your name, and we say, well, now, we want to take up this matter, and he says, just a moment, I have an appointment, to cancel. And you say, the name of the case that I'd like to take up with you is Casey, and he says, let's see, now, my, clerk was recently discharged, and, we will have to get the typist in there to see that if she can't take some notes about what we're going to talk about. Look, do one of two things. Either run, don't walk, to the nearest exit. Or take this boy and put him actually, practically with duress in the two-way communication with you. One or the other. If you're good at handling and creating and bringing into existence two-way communication, you will be able to actually bring this person into two-way communication long enough to get an interview over with. Not that he'll do you a great deal of good. But if you don't, why talk to him? Because you haven't got any other chair to sit in? That'll be the only possible reason. This is an interesting fact that you in this lifetime have to associate with, handle, and be in continued connection with a number of people who are not in good communication. And there won't be any way for you to sidestep that association. Just because it happens to be slightly in the majority in the society. You go on a fishing trip. You want to have a nice fishing trip, but you went with Joe and Joe brought Bill along. And you didn't know Bill, and there's Bill. And Bill has packed two bedrolls and a number of cans of pâté de foie gras, but has not brought his fishing rod. It's just inevitable that this sort of thing is going to happen. You should then know what pursues from this immediate situation. Left to his own devices, Bill is going to lose the canoe and collapse the tent on the fire. So it isn't entirely safe to neglect Bill. But do you know that if you were real good, if you're real good, you knew two-way communication very well, in other words, if you're a good, sharp auditor, you know that you could, not really by processing him at all, you could kick him upscale so he'd stay there artificially for 2, 3, 4, 5 days, however long you're going to be gone. And then let him come back and collapse. You actually could do this. That was very interesting. A staff auditor the other day got in front of somebody who was going yap, 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 yap. This poor, two pre-clears, man and wife. And this poor guy had been pounded with an obsessive outflow for the last 50 years and wondered what was wrong with him. And the auditor who was auditing the girl was having a very rough time because it was just constant, continual outflow. No communication involved here, you see, just yap, yap, yap. So, what did the guy's auditor do? He shut off her compulsive outflow as long as he was auditing the husband. How'd he do it? He got right in front of her when she was doing all his talking. Right in front of her, got in her line of sight, and tracked his face with hers, until finally she couldn't avoid seeing him. And held up his finger like this. She was still going. And held up his finger like this, and said, "Good!" Outflow shut off for the first time during the intensive. And she sat there and all of a sudden looked rather satisfied. Things went along a little better. I could tell you a lot more about it. The case is far more complicated than that, but I just want to give you an idea. Many a time an auditor sits there and he says to the pre-clear, "Good, good, fine, mm-hmm, all right, good, fine." And thinks he's acknowledging. Well, he must have been, along with so many people in bad communication for such a long period of time, that he has incomplete apathy about people receiving his acknowledgments because he just isn't noticing that the pre-clear is not receiving his acknowledgments. What is an acknowledgment to this person? Maybe being run into at 25 or 30 miles an hour with a heavy car. He'd know something was there. Maybe being kicked suddenly and viciously. Maybe being shot. All these things would be about the first real level of acknowledgement. This would be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, you would get his attention that you had said something. It's a fascinating condition of affairs. Very, very fascinating. When an auditor thinks it's only necessary to say yes and oh, well, now I don't advise you to run into your Prinkler with a heavy car. I don't advise you to do a lot of things. But you certainly had better make sure that your acknowledgement is hitting home. Now, I had an interesting example of somebody the other day. I told him to come to work and told him what I wanted to do. And I let it slide. He gave me an acknowledgement. And at the moment, I thought, you know, that sounds kind of funny. I mean, that's a sort of a hollow ring, and there's a kind of a wild wander in his eye. But I was very rushed, and I did not follow it through. And for not taking off 1 minute there to get an acknowledgement, to get one this time, I lost about 3 hours of work 2 days later because he didn't appear and had forgotten it. I have asked a person as often as 3 or 4 times, did you hear me? Did you hear what I said? And at first the person says, uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. And then says, well, yes, thinking, my, here's somebody that sounds angry because he's repeated something. Definition of anger. And then the person, all of a sudden, look at me rather penetratingly and nearsightedly and say, hey, what were we talking about? And then go through the instructions again very carefully. And then say, now, did you hear that? You got him up to a point where he's slightly listening. Go through the instructions again. And somewhere along the line, the person will give you a very clear cut. Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you know you've stood right there sometimes and told the service station attendant, now I want the radiator filled and I want the tires inflated and there's a bad spark plug? And he said, okay, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And you went away and you came back and paid for it. Only you didn't have it. He was thinking about 12 other things. There was no exchange of ideas. So you run into two-way communication every time you turn around in life, so don't relegate it just to auditing. All right, unless we have a principle of that kind in mind, unless we understand that communication is the disintegrator of barriers and the creator of space, unless we understand its formula thoroughly in handling Homo sapiens, we wind up by not handling him. We wind up by being handled by him. Simple as that. So with any new process, no matter how super tailor-made, no matter how aptly it fits the computation of this case, any new process is built on the solid foundation of communication. And with that factor absent, why run it? You know that Dianetics and Scientology and all the new research material, from time to time, a lot of new research material and so on, suddenly found a fail in a number of cases. You know, here's a number of cases still around, and it's failed on these cases. It's an oddity, isn't it? You know what we did not too long ago? We got some of these guys on whom all these new processes had failed, and you know what we did? We set them down on an e-meter. This was some months ago. We set them down on an e-meter which told on them. And they had yet to run the process given by any auditor anywhere. Very interesting. As a little girl, she's here for some time for processing. She got better toward the end, but the auditor who was auditing her at first was going uphill against this kind of thing. This wasn't the type of process being run on her. All right, but get the idea now that your father isn't here. The girl's response to this: I don't like father. Say it was her mental response. She would say to herself, well, I don't like father. The auditor say, did you do that? She'd say, mm-hmm. That was the history of this case, hour after hour after hour after hour. Auditing going down the drain. Why? Nobody had established the two-way communication factors of this case. And nobody had established whether or not she could duplicate. So we look way up the line up there. Furthermore, this person was incapable of thinking a thought. This factor hadn't been established. If this person couldn't think a thought, then what on earth use was it trying to give the person a thought to think? This is what must have been happening day in and day out for ages. Everybody and everything giving that person a thought to think, that person never thinking the thought. See? So we take those six basic processes, we find out problems, solutions, that sort of thing in that category. Is simply the process of thinking a thought. HC is the objective reality of existence. Duplication is the ability actually to do the same thing twice. If he can't do the same thing twice, how in the devil could he ever hear anything you said? See, it was done once when you said it. To register it, he had to do it the second time. If he can't duplicate, he doesn't register it. And there you get the breakdown of communication. So all these factors are stretched out in front of him. No research material, no matter how smart, clever, or upsetting it has been in the hands of an expert auditor, two cases that were recalcitrant, is of any use or value to you of any kind whatsoever if you do not know your six basic processes. Now, back here in the university, I always have to add that on. You know, Korzybski used to have the quotes, you know, you sort of held up your fingers and put a quote on either side of the word. That was a cute trick. Well, I have just invented one. And that is, huh. And that means sick. Or it means, oh, yeah. University of Chicago. Well, some of the jokers back there released a bulletin not long ago. Show you the right up to present time. And they said that there were vast claims made by Dianetics for its efficacy in handling cases. So that the psychology department of the university had undertaken to give a great number of people Dianetic auditing. And discovered there was no results of any kind. Now, the great oddity of this was that although it was very specific in laying out the claims of Dianetics, it was not at all specific and was indeed very vague on the subject of who did the Dianetic auditing, who was it done to, what period of Dianetic auditing, over what period of time, who did the psychometrics. But being, of course, a psychology department, it naturally could not follow an experimental design. Now, what value is this remark? Well, actually, it has no more scientific value than this gimmick I have just given you of See? It has no value. And yet they come forth and they regurgitate a lot of stuff and so on. Because Dianetic auditing cannot exist, although the psychology departments believe that anything can exist without one. Dianetic auditing cannot exist without the presence of two minds. It has to have, perforce. Now, all right, if it can't exist without the presence of two minds, we must then recognize that both of these minds must be intent on Dianetics, not something else. You see, if they're really doing Dianetics, then they're intent on Dianetics. Their attention is on Dianetics in order for there to be any communication on the subject between auditor and preclear. And when we don't mention who the auditor was or where he was trained, they never did the experiment. And in keeping with psychology departments, they just lied like hell. See, they never did such an experiment. But the fact of the matter is you could not have such a thing as Dianetic auditing in the absence of an auditor. Please get this real straight, because it's right straight. It sounds so simple, and it is so damn fundamental that you're going to miss it time after time. Scientology auditing cannot exist in the absence of an auditor. It can't. Einstein's formula may be a wonderful thing. I direct your attention to the pre-logics of Dianetics. Einstein's formula may be the most amazing thing you ever heard of in your life, and left out here, lying wide open as a book on the desert to be read by horned toads, would be completely meaningless. There's no mind present to be part of the formula. The formula is only alive at that time when it's associated with a mind. That's an oddity, but that's also true of mathematics. It's true of any scholastic subject, and it's particularly true of life. Life is meaningless in the absence of life. All right, now that sounds like a cliche practically. I mean, it sounds like something that's very pat and redundant. But the truth of the matter is life is meaningless in the absence of life. And if you just say that, an abstract subject does not exist in the absence of a mind to be part of the subject. The subject is only alive as long as the mind is concentrating on it and has given its attention to it. The only thing wrong with any of your pre-clears, you want to get down to a terribly fundamental, was simply that he finds everything meaningless and kind of unhappy, you know? Or he finds a lot of fields unhappy or upsetting to him, or boring, and no longer is he on the qui vive about life. He remembers with what vibrance he wanted to paint those beautiful cover girls, you know? He remembers there when he was 20, 21, going to art school, and cover girls. Boy, could he paint girls. And life has gone on, and he remembers vaguely that there was something like that, and he felt better about this whole subject than he feels now. Felt better about it. He doesn't feel good about it now. He will tell you life doesn't have any meaning to him, you know, anymore. It's not as significant. It is not as serious. It's not as straight down the course at 180 miles an hour. I mean, that's not the way life is anymore. Life is, that's how life is. Why? He's living it in absence of life. Life hasn't any meaning at all if no life is present. And if he has cut down the amount of livingness which he is willing to experience, then he's cut down the amount of meaningness that life could have. And life could get as empty and as pointless as Einstein's textbook lying wide open. I don't know if he wrote a textbook or not, but somebody probably will someday. Boy, will that be a mess. Lying out here on the desert wide open with a horned toad sitting on it. That, of course, I think is the ultimate goal of nuclear physics, to put all of its thoughts into the possession of a horned toad. Life is, therefore, as meaningful as life is present. Things have as much meaning as one is alive. This is so completely idiotic that you would miss it continually. And so, although I have given you a very large prelude to the amount of auditing, research, and investigation which has gone on during the last couple of weeks, it's all very germane. Because this is one of the most interesting fundamentals which I have turned up with my little tin shovel. Fascinating thing. What the devil are you doing? What are you in a doing? What is your preclear doing? You're taking meaning out of life. Meaning out of life, meaning out of life, meaning out of life. And just to make sure that you get a stuck flow, you're taking meaning out of life, meaning out of life, meaning out of life. And just in case this doesn't jam a ridge up in front of your face, you take some more meaning out of life. You let life tell you whether it is meaningful or not. And it is as meaningful. It is as meaningful as you were alive. And it is no more meaningful than that. And if you've been shot often enough, or caught on other types of one-way flows into you often enough and long enough, I can assure you, you won't be very alive. So here is one of the most fundamental crossroads there is in the field of the mind. Communication, given meaning of its own formula, and given the presence of your aliveness, can actually relay and exchange ideas. Absolutely fascinating. I mean, you take the modus operandi of life in the exchange of ideas, which is communication. And you're sitting there alive, and what do you know? The person you're talking to will come up tone scale. You gave them a shot in the arm. How did you give them a shot in the arm? By being alive. And if you're alive, life has meaning. And if you're not alive, it doesn't have any meaning. And if life hasn't any meaning to the person you're talking to, all you've got to do is to make sure that he at least receives some live ideas and communication, and he will be more alive, and life will have more meaning, and he'll come up the tone scale. It's just as easy and stupidly simple as this. Communication is that hypodermic needle, one of its uses, by which the dead can be made to talk. Now, this becomes a very interesting thing to the auditor. Here's the auditor. And he lets his preclear continue to violate the two-way communication formula. He lets his preclear violate it hour after hour after hour after hour. You know what the preclear will do? He'll either remain static or he'll wobble up scale an 18,000th of a point at a time. Why? How would you like to run a train between here and Pike's Peak with no rails? Just direct overland route. No rails. You got the engine, the cars, and so forth. And we're going to run this train from here right straight to the top of Pike's Peak, and we're not going to build a single section of railroad. Now, it's really not that the auditor is sitting there by some necromancy actually using a bicycle pump, you know, to pump this preclear up. But let me assure you that if you didn't pump him up somewhat, he couldn't be pumped up at all. So it's actually a legitimate part of the operation to put the bicycle pump to him. But the fact of the matter is that running the train is impossible without some rails. Putting a bicycle pump on your preclear is impossible without a hose and a connection. Beeping him up isn't possible unless you yourself make sure that the railroad of two-way communication exists. And then he'll be able to accumulate some meaning out of life. All of the various formulas and anything else in Scientology are liable to become extremely clear to him. Not necessarily because you were telling them to him, or not necessarily because you're pumping him up. But he's being confronted by the modus operandi of exchange and communication, and there are two terminals present here, and so life will begin to have more meaning. Now, what do you want this fellow to do, this pre-clear over here? You're saying, all right, now give me some places where your mother isn't having kittens. And you want him to realize at long length that his mother is not anywhere around and never did have kittens. And on this vast cognition, you suppose that he is going to improve. Well, now, this is a perfectly reasonable thing for you to suppose, as long as you know something else, that he will cognite. He will have a cognition to the degree that he is alive. And he will be alive to the degree that he feels safe to continue in communication with existence. And out of these factors, we unravel one of the knottier problems of Scientology, which is simply this R, the R corner of the triangle. You have to process to the level of reality of your pre-clear, and if your pre-clear does not get up to any level of reality, gets up to no cognition, you know that you can run a process until the communication lag is flat, or until the pre-clear gets a cognition. Of these two things, the best one is cognition. Finally, the pre-clear sits back and he says, you know, that's something I discovered here completely independently. You know, my mother's nowhere around here at all. What do you know? She never did have kittens either. Well, well. See, cognition. What's cognition? That is aliveness. That is the meaning in life. And there is as much meaning in life as there is life and aliveness. And there's no more meaning in life than there is aliveness. So you wonder why this fellow's sitting over there being stupid. He isn't being stupid because his face has collapsed. That's a manifestation of his stupidity. He isn't being stupid because he has a large number of engrams pushed into his chest. That is another manifestation of his stupidity. He isn't stupid because he can no longer handle force. That is a manifestation of it. He is stupid because he doesn't believe he had better be alive. And that's how dumb he is. That's all there is to it. There is one mechanic only that fits into this scheme. One mechanic only. From which we get a series of mechanics, of course. Communication. This one mechanic of communication fits very intimately into this scene because the individual convinces himself of his own aliveness to the degree that he is capable of communicating and being communicated to. And that's how alive he thinks he is. It's just as simple as that. But let's look here a little closer at it, and recognize that this pre-clears communication somewhere along the line became upset and fell down on one of the fundamentals of communication, which is the stuck flow. If you have a communication line which is going always in one direction, it will eventually force itself to go in that direction, and then will stick forced in that direction. And then it will invert, far less powerful, and will backfire on the same line. But this one-way flow is a stuck flow. Wherever you have a one-way flow, you have a stuck flow. For instance, Scientology right now would be a stuck flow if you didn't write letters, if you didn't report cases, if you didn't contribute your ideas and your thoughts, your activities and organization, if I didn't know about them. If I didn't have auditors' conferences and things like this, it'd get to be a stuck flow. But it's not a stuck flow. Otherwise, by the usual rule of somebody researching and doing something on a fairly independent basis, my communication line would have been stuck solid about 2 years ago. They're not only not stuck solid, They are having a ball right now. I have been continually experimenting on how to make these communication lines more effective, and I tell you, a fellow worried with a stuck flow doesn't do this. Now, here we got a stuck flow, one-way flow. All right. This one-way flow will eventually cave the person in. Let's get the idea that people start shooting at you, whether they hit you or not. If they shot at you long enough without you shooting back at all, you would get into a total belief that the totality of life was composed of people shooting at you. If they shot at you long enough, this would be your totality of existence. Now, here's a fascinating thing. Here's a very fascinating thing. Where you have an individual then being subjected continually to stuck flow and never opening his mouth in the opposite direction, never giving back an opinion, never saying anything, always in one place, more or less, really not doing anything with the shots, you will get an individual up to a point where he has accumulated actual ridges, all the vectors of which are pushed in against himself. You want to know what's happened to some of these people who have all these ridges out in front of them? Well, that's what's happened to them. Now, there are people who have ridges the opposite direction. You'll occasionally see a very thin person, and you'll say, isn't it lucky this person couldn't possibly have a ridge? Oh, you made a mistake. His one-way stuck flow ridges are outflow ridges, and they're way out there. Get the idea? They're stuck on the target that he was shooting at so long and obsessively. Now, he thinks livingness is shooting at this target. The other person who has the incoming flow thinks that livingness is being shot at. That's livingness. Oh, but it is a livingness in violation of two-way communication, so therefore his aliveness would be very poor, so therefore his meaningness would drop, wouldn't it? And he would be stupid. You could actually instruct somebody in stupidity. You could talk somebody into stupidity. You actually could. One, you wouldn't let him ever use his mind to observe anything you were teaching him. Two, you would never send him in to any area where the material you were teaching him was being used. Three, you would never at any time let him reply to the instructor in any way, shape, or form. Modern education. And a fellow, after a while, sits there. Gah! And the object of all this is the instructor or the board of examiners or somebody in the university is supposed to be able to come up and say, give me the vector formulas. And the fellow's supposed to say, yep, 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 yep. I don't know why they're asking this fellow, though, because they've got it in a textbook. The only possible use an individual would be to himself and to those around him would be his aliveness. We can build all the machines we need. Now, here we have the fascinating thing that then of educating people as entirely opposed to making people smart. Be entirely opposed to this. Educating people would not necessarily make them successful people, because they would cease to be successful the moment the machine, a part of which they were a cogwheel, went into any inaction. Or supposing somebody modernized the machine. You know, this is a bum deal. All right, so your individual is actually as valuable as he is alive. And he is as happy, and he's as comfortable, and he's as competent, and he is as intelligent as he can put meaning into life and accept meaning from life without qualms. Get that? He can put meaning into life. Now, I've discovered a lot of things in the last 2 weeks. actually discovered about ownership and got a new sub-zero tone scale. There's all kinds of very remarkable things. We found ways to as-is things on preclears that never before as-ised anything. But all these are pale. Something very startling. They're all very pale alongside of this formula of meaningfulness. Unless you can get your preclear to start putting meaning into life, things, objects, spaces, people, thoughts, he will continue to be subjected to this stuck flow. What kind of stuck flow is it? What do we mean by meaning? He looks back there at the back wall. He didn't really voluntarily look back at the back wall. He looked at the back wall because the back wall was there and he was here. No other reason than that. And the back wall, in its size, structure, and density, says to him, I'm the back wall. I am here to do so and so and so and so and so and so. He doesn't even say okay. There's just a back wall. It's putting meaning into life. Gets a new car. Guy gets a new car. He said, now, look how wonderful life's going to be. I'm going to get this nice, sleek, shiny, park hard, which is this beautiful pink top and maroon underbase. And this immediately is going to make life wonderful. He goes out and he looks at it. He feels pretty good for a very short time. He looks at it. It's saying, I am a car. I am sitting here. I drive down streets. It's all saying. And the very funny part of it is he looks back on his life 3 months hence and he says, you know, he said the possession of that park card simply means the payment at regular intervals of certain sums of money into the hands of very impolite finance corporation people. It's told him something else, hasn't it? Meaning. Let's put meaning into life, all right? Well, is he as happy as the little kid? The little kid goes out. Maybe this kid, by the way, is lucky. Maybe he's got a rich grandfather or uncle or something. And he gets himself a new coaster wagon. And somebody wheels up this new coaster wagon, and there it is. And he says, now, here's your coaster wagon. You take good care of it. Yap, 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 yap. It doesn't matter what they said. This kid's still a kid, and he's in there pitching. He's very alive. He's got life ahead of him. Second that relative turns his back, the kid probably takes the sideboards off of it or changes wheels around or something, makes it more usable. And instead of just sitting there, he puts a little more meaning into it. He tells his pals next door, look at the new fire engine. Now we're a fire engine. We. Now we're driving horses. We. We're doing this. Maybe he just had a broomstick, and he goes around with a broomstick between his legs, making galloping sounds. Boy, is he putting meaning into life. They're going to educate him pretty soon. Isn't it a funny thing that under one uniform school system, the illusion of life, tends to fold up at almost exactly the same age in every person. The brightness of life. And isn't it a funny thing that this is only true in a uniform school system? That we would have a uniform age where disillusionment would more or less be affected by the individual. He's really just kind of accepting it contemptuously when he's saying, well, I'm all disillusioned about life. I've grown up now. If he actually is having something happen to him, what's happened to him? His meaning, the meaningfulness of life has reversed. Now, is this necessarily true that at the age of 17... one becomes disillusioned, and thereafter life does not seem as bright. Is this uniformly true? Is this necessarily true of the human race? No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's the degree that the individual has been inflowed upon. And where a school system is totally devoted to inflowing upon this individual, and putting in certain brackets, you have a common denominator. The school system really is not responsible for it. We merely have a common denominator for the society, which establishes more or less a common age for disillusionment to occur. See, that's about the only thing that happens. All right, let's look in some other society that doesn't believe in education. Of course, we'd say, well, that's immediately going to be a decadent society. Not necessarily. It might not be a rich society, having no mineral resources or something of this sort, but it's not necessarily decadent because it's uneducated. Education has nothing to do with it. The society is as good as it's alive, and it gets as dead as it's educated. Anyway, here sits an old man down in the West Indies, 68 years old. And he's got every single illusion. We go around the rest of his tribe and we ask them what they think about life. They're all pretty calm. They're nice to kids. They actually can endure one awful lot of hard work. They're getting along okay. Their standard of life is something that we would say is too horrible to even be held. Let's hope that we're never asked to get along without electric refrigerators. Now, person isn't disillusioned. Well, that's a fascinating thing. Why isn't he disillusioned? He's been in two-way communication with his environment and the tribe. He'll tell you as many fairy tales about the environment as it will tell him about itself. He will tell it as many fairy tales about itself. He'll walk out one morning and he will say, it's raining, and he doesn't like the idea that it's raining, and he'll say, well, look what a promising sunset. He just shouldn't say that. It isn't really necessary that he tell a lie about it. Lie is when you do this and are punished for it. Then it becomes a lie. He's giving meaning to life. Some of these people are the most fantastic people you've ever seen. I've run into them. I've been through about 12 savage tribes, one kind or another, in studying man. I've run across some very many interesting things. I have to write a book about it sometime. Various customs and so forth, adventures. But what's really fascinating is that when those tribes are healthy tribes, they're quite successful. Not only in their environment, they're quite successful. But their success is not necessarily mechanical, something we might not immediately grasp. But they are successful because they are being happy. They're doing to a large extent what they want to do. Life is bright to them. And when those tribes are not being successful, life is very dull. They're being inflowed upon much too heavily, and their imaginations are very bad. When you say, put meaning into life, and have life, permit life to put meaning into you, we're just talking about two-way communication with significance. That's all we're talking about. One of the most murderous processes I know, then, is a think-a-thought process. Murder. You just tell a fellow to start putting some meaning into life. And you will get more energy flow disturbances in the vicinity of his face. You will get more cave-ins of his bank and slaps of engrams than you have ever seen in any process yet. It's violent. Because he's caught in the one stuck flow which is common to all life. Every object, space, shape, and form around him is putting meaning into him. And it's doing it all the time, all the time, all the time. And he gets apathetic after a while and he doesn't put any meaning into it. So he gets a stuck flow. So he isn't giving anything to life anymore. His postulates don't stick anymore. His power isn't there. He can't communicate. He's always being subjected to this stuck flow. Well, I went down the line and I saw that there must be a missing point here someplace in the communication formula if communication uniformly broke down in this universe. There just must be something haywire that happened as a common denominator of happening to communication. There must be a common error to this universe and communication. Must be some inhibition in this universe on the subject. And this common denominator must itself be this factor of meaning. significance, always delivered to the individual, always laid on his doorstep, always handed to him. Now, he could go the other way entirely. He could go around doing nothing but assigning meaning to life around him. A Thetan would do that if he was stuck in space of his own creation. The only one present, he is assigning meaning to everything. He has assigned the meaning to everything in that space. Everything. He's on the other stuck flow, isn't he? Life would eventually appear as dull to him. Stuck flow either way. So here he sits trying to compensate on Earth. And the television gives him meaning. And the park and lily ads give him meaning. And everything gives him meaning. And he sits there waiting for things to come up with a silver platter and give him meaning. And they don't. All they do is give him a headache. The only meaningfulness that he will profit from, if he is here on earth, is an outflow of meaningness. He's got the outflows of meaningfulness for a while. He's got to outflow meaningfulness for a while. Do you see that? But if he outflowed it all the time and accepted no meaningfulness from his environment, he would be on another stuck flow. All right. He is as alive as life is meaningful to him, he will tell you. He looks for life to give him his meaningfulness, and thereby he fails. Because he gets on a stuck flow. So actually, any stuck flow winds up one in a rather poor condition of affairs. But is there some place in all these errors of communication, is there somewhere in all these errors of communication, a common denominator which, if undone, would markedly release your preclear from all your communication blocks? And that would be an interesting thing. Is there such a point? Yes, there is, and that point is remedy meaningfulness, whether outflow or inflow. So we get a preclear who's been here on earth, he's been educated, he's been to the University of Chicago, poor guy. He's been in the government, he's been in jail, he's been... I can't get any lower. He gets inflow. What is this? And why is this important? Well, let me tell you another little factor here, which I would very, very much like to give you. It was obvious from the first that those things which were the most damaging in the auditor's code contained by empirical research, they were discovered, it was found that these factors did horrible things, preclears, when they were disobeyed, those factors must contain some of the heart of aberration itself, if in an auditing session they raise so much havoc.